Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest. She hasn't been on the show in forever, and I'm sorry for that. But this is going to be quite an interesting show. My guest is Ellen Brown. She's an attorney. She's the chair of the Public Banking Institute. She's authored 13 books. Her latest book is Banking on the People, Democratizing Money in the Digital Age. She also co-hosts a radio program on PRN.FM called It's Our Money. You can check out tons of her work at ellenbrown.com. I have a live link here. I have a couple of shows with her in the archives. So I'm really happy to have Ellen on the show today. Good morning, Ellen.
Oh, good morning, Maria. Great to talk to you.
It's always good to talk to you. I have to tell you that I've followed your work, you know, all these years. But when you put up this latest piece on August 22nd, I was like, wow, this is a break for Ellen because it was unexpected. You know, I'm so used to you commenting on the economy that this was a totally different article. And I immediately posted it everywhere on social media because I think it's that important. And for my listeners, the article is called From Lockdown to Police State, The Great Reset Rolls Out, which is a topic I talked about with Richie Allen on his show yesterday. So I think it's very timely that I had you on the show today, Ellen. You know, here in my town, a lot of places are refusing to take cash right now, whether it's a coffee shop or whatever, especially franchises. They're not allowed to take cash. And when we ask the kids that work at these places, they resent it because they say their tips are less. And a lot of people are upset that they can't use cash for whatever it is they're shopping for. My idea is I go back to the 1960s when I first heard about the ridiculous idea of going to a cashless society. What do you think of all of this? Do you think this is one of the big goals, is to control our money and everything be digitalized?
Yeah, well, as I wrote in that article, actually I wrote 10 books on health and the politics of health. Oh. My first 10 books were in that area, I don't do talk shows on it usually. I do talk shows on public banking, as you noted. So, yeah. Sorry, what was your question again?
How do you think this is the big move to a cashless society?
Oh, definitely. That is one of the goals of the Great Reset, apparently, the one that's being proposed by the World Economic Forum, which covers just about everything. But if you read summaries of it, what they're really focused on, what their number one goal seems to be, is to change the monetary system. I mean, the Great Reset, or the term reset, has been used for decades, but it previously referred to fixing the money system or fixing the debt or maybe, you know, writing off the debt or whatever. So we've had a number of resets before. If you could go all the way back to the Federal Reserve and the 1970s when it all became sort of globalized. So here we are again, and we obviously need some sort of reset. And in my next article, which I'm still working on, I'm going to propose some things that, you know, would actually serve the people and serve all the people, which this proposed Great Reset doesn't appear to be serving. So obviously they're trying to mandate a vaccine, and that is one thing that will be achieved or is achieved by establishing the existence of an actual pandemic or epidemic. Mm-hmm. And so that was one thing I was questioning in this article. I mean, I don't doubt that there is a virus out there, or, you know, we've definitely got some sort of a disease problem going on right now. But they've sort of fixed the numbers, for one thing, that doctors and hospitals are supposed to report anyone who has had any, that was either diagnosed positive for COVID-19 or who has symptoms that look like they could have been COVID-19, they were supposed to mark that down as a COVID death, you know, if they died or as, anyway, we can go into all that. But yeah, so what it has to do with a digital currency is that, of course, like you pointed out, there's the cashlessness, but the motive, if you want to get very conspiratorial, Aaron Russo in 2005, I think it was, said in a movie he said it in a documentary that he had been befriended by one of the Rockefellers who was trying to get him into the Council on Foreign Relations. And it was Nick Rockefeller, I think his name was, one of the obscure parties, but people in the family tree. And so Russo asked him, what's the goal of all this? And then Nick Rockefeller said it was to get everybody chipped so that everybody would have like a number and they could track you by your number. And if you got out of line in any way, then they could turn off your money.
Right.
And of course, there's obviously a goal right now to have people identified by their medical status, whether they're positive or negative on this COVID-19. And they actually have the technology now. I mean, in 2005, that just sounded outrageous because you thought, well, how could they possibly do that? But they can. They actually have the technology to put in a vaccine, and there are several. There was ID 2020, and that's one of their goals, and they're actually experimenting with this in Bangladesh and other places, apparently, where you put some sort of tracer in the vaccine, and the U.S. government has already bought millions of syringes that have their own RFID tags on the outside of the syringe, so you can tell who got which, you know, the contents of which syringe. Now, why do they need to know that? If they only want to track the batches,
right,
they can just write it down in your records, you know, what you got, and they would know, well, so many people in this area got this or whatever. But they seem to want to be able to track it individually, and why would they want to do that? If they can imprint you with some sort of tag like they do with animals that has an ID number on it, then they can have some supercomputer that knows, that stores all the data, all your personal data. And of course, everybody knows that data now is a big commodity, that they sell data.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they can store your financial data along with your medical data. And if you do, they could track you. They would know where you are. I guess they have to get close. What they have right now is you have to get pretty close to it. Like, I would worry about being targeted from the sky, you know, some satellite, but I don't think they have it down that much. I mean, from what I've read,
right,
what they could track with a tracer is they'd have to get close to you with some sort of reader. So who they would target would be anyone getting on a plane or any kind of public transport. They could hold this reader up close to see what your number was and to see what your vaccine status was, or whether you were positive or negative. And if you were positive, obviously not let you on the plane, or if you hadn't been tested, not let you on the plane. And then there's all this talk of the contact tracers where they can go door to door. And that's what I wrote about in this article, that they have quite draconian lockdown measures have now been imposed in Victoria, Australia, where based on very flimsy data, they got 11 new deaths. And because of that, they increase these lockdown measures, and the 11 deaths were all in nursing homes. So locking them down would not have saved their lives, because those people aren't out on the street anyway. But what they've done is that the police can come to your door. You're not allowed to go out except for to shop. And if you do that, you have to go alone. You can't even take a family member with you. I mean, what do single mothers do, I wonder?
Right.
So either to shop or to caregive, or you can exercise for 1 hour, but it has to be within 5 miles of home. So they were actually breaking down car windows when people wouldn't tell them what they were, you know, where they were going, or give them a justified excuse for being out. And they could come into your home without a search warrant. And there's a video that went viral that you probably saw of a pregnant woman, where they came and they arrested, you know, just came into the house without a search warrant and arrested her because she put something on Facebook that was, criticized the lockdown in some way.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting, and you talk about there are no coincidences. This morning before the show, I got an email from one of my listeners in Victoria. At first, she started off complimenting my shows this week, and then she wrote this, Ellen. I'm in the most locked down Western place, as far as I understand, during this pandemic. 8 weeks in March, and then another 8 weeks from July. Victoria has a full lockdown, an 8 p.m. curfew, mask at times, and no movement beyond 5 miles from home. Homeschooling, all non-essential shops closed, people are losing their shit, and a massive malaise has begun. It's really sad. She said, I'm waiting it out, teaches you patience, and this is tyranny. Interesting is that? And then I got a news story this morning that Facebook is trying to pass a blockage law to stop people in Australia from posting news on Facebook. So
There
you can see how they're trying worldwide to cover up what's going on in Australia, because like I've told people with China, that's already doing this, what they do in one place, they're going to do around the world. This is their goal.
Yeah, no, I agree. And China is the obvious place to test all these things because the government has total control there, so they can test it and see, you know, what they can get away with. Yeah.
Right. So then, you know, when I was reading through your piece, first of all, I'm shocked at what's going on in Australia, especially the part where cops can now enter your home without a warrant. So whenever they want, they can just come in and, you know, mess you around, you know. And I thought about Breonna Taylor and that no-knock warrant, and then they shot her dead, and I don't know how many bullets were all over her apartment. And here, at least, people are protesting her murder. But if they make it legal that they can just come and go whenever they want, I don't know how that's going to sit with heavily armed Americans.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure this is their difficult test case. And then there are bills on for millions of contact tracers that will be trained to go door to door. And apparently they can test, although the PCR test, that was one thing I wrote about. It's very unreliable. The man who invented it said that it should not be used to establish the presence of a virus. And that's the standard test that we're using. It's the swab test. I've also seen that it can be quite painful. It gets very close to the brain. People have had headaches for a long time after they get this test. But so you don't want amateurs going around, like maybe homeless people or whatever, that they've trained to go door to door.
Right.
Going around and administering these tests. So they can go around and say, well, you were in a restaurant where somebody else who had the virus was. Of course, nobody goes to restaurants anymore, but they can trace you somehow, whatever, maybe a gas station or something where they trace your credit card. I don't know how they trace. But even if you stayed away from anybody that knew your name or address, they could still trace you through your cell phone or through your credit cards and come to your door, say you've been in contact with someone, and then either insist that you get a test or administer the test right there, which might be a bit dangerous in itself. I don't know.
Right.
I've heard rumors that the test itself could be spreading the virus, but I certainly don't know that that's true, and I don't want to go on record as saying that's true. But who knows? You know, you're getting a test that has not really, it's definitely not been established to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wrote about, which seemed to me most shocking, was that in 2007, there was an article in the New York Times about an epidemic that had been created by this test, or the appearance of an epidemic. It was whooping cough, and it was in a hospital where they thought they had a problem, and so they had tested 1,000 employees and sent them all home, furloughed them for, I think, 8 months. And when they retested them in a reliable test against the actual whooping cough virus, that used the actual virus, the way these tests go, I don't totally understand them. But anyway, a test that used the actual virus, there were no whooping cough cases. Like, all of the positives were false positives.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create an epidemic with this test, or the appearance of an epidemic.
Right.
So you can create a lot of false positives.
Uh-huh.
And we've all heard about all these cases that people that test positive that have no symptoms. Well, are you diseased if you have no symptoms? If you feel fine, you're not coughing, you don't have a fever, do you have a disease? No, seems like.
Right.
Anyway, there's all that controversial stuff. So there seems to be the attempt to keep this appearance of a pandemic going, whether it really is or not. I mean, I personally, I know lots of people know people who've gotten sick, but I personally don't know anyone here who has gotten, you know, who has actually been sick or even tested positive.
So we talked a little before the show, and I know plenty of people. And it starts, for most of them, they lose their sense of smell and their sense of taste. But by the way, Aaron Russo, I remember Aaron very well. His film was From Freedom to Fascism.
Right.
And everybody should see that film. He was like a prophet. But, you know, when I'm listening to you talk about the chip in a vaccine and the year you read about it, I remember back in the 80s, when I was studying Native American spirituality with Sun Bear, who's no longer on the planet. And he talked about the size of the chips that they would make that would be like 1/100th of the size of a grain of rice. And he said the best way they'll do that is through a vaccine. And people need to pay attention to that. You know, of course, we were considered crazy in those days talking about these things. I'm sure so was Aaron Russo, so was Dave McGowan. On his excellent book on fascism in America. But when you look at it in this contact tracing crap, a couple of weeks ago, I recall on my news show, I had a news story that they had invented an app that they could not only put on all Apple phones, but on all the knockoff brands as well. And their excuse was, you know, to use it as contact tracing. So, you know, Americans have been through their cell phones allowing self-surveillance, basically. And yes, still to today in 2020, I still don't have a cell phone. You know, it's easier than people think for us to move into total fascism, total control. And when you were talking about the test, I had told you before the show that about a month or so ago, I went to urgent care because I woke up with all kinds of symptoms. And the doctor luckily remembered me, and he said, "These are your allergies, Maria." And then he told me that the test at best, he said, there may be 50% accurate, maybe even 70%. He said, but it'll take 12 days to get the results. You could get the virus the day after you had the test. So he thought the testing was a waste of time, not accurate, and he said to me, you know, the best thing to do is just keep your immune system strong and stay away from people. But
right, and if it's 50% accurate, you could get that by flipping a coin.
Exactly.
50% is, yeah.
Now, you also said in your article that people in Australia can face a $5,000 fine if they don't have a good reason for even being outside their homes.
Yeah, very expensive. And what if I don't know what they do about homeless people. Maybe they don't have homeless there, but they certainly don't have $5,000 to pay a fine.
No, they don't even have a home to leave.
Yeah, well, here in L.A., people want to go to jail. I mean, homeless people do because they feed them there.
Right. But then you also talked about something that's very frightening because, you know, here in America, sometimes I think we're lucky that we have so many insane people in this country. Okay. There's one thing to be aware, awake, and educated about your decisions. But then we have the flip side, you know, the total crazies in this country. You know, whether they're, you know, white supremacists, militia, whatever they are. And I think the latest stat that I read was something close to 55% of Americans say they won't take the vaccine. So they know that the anti-vaxxers are going to be a problem. For me, I consider myself an anti-vaxxer. But when I read in this article this scary little sentence of four words, I was like, uh-oh. No jab, no pay. So this is something that they could do very easily. You know, if you can't prove you had a vaccine, you can't go back to work.
Right. Or if you can't prove that you've tested positive, tested negative, which would be obviously a lot less, arguably less invasive. I don't know, going right in towards your brain in the nasal passage. I've read that part in the nasal passage, that can also cause you to lose your sense of smell. So people may have lost their sense of smell because of this test. I don't know.
I'll tell you what. I went to see my masseuse, and as soon as I walked in, she said, you know, I think I'm going to wear a mask today because I woke up and I can't taste my coffee. She said, then I went to spray some perfume on. I couldn't smell it. I threw my hands up in the air. Luckily, I was still about 10 feet away from her. And I said, you have the virus. I said, those are the symptoms. I said, you need to go get tested. And which she did. And then it progressed. You know, the fatigue set in, the body aches, whatever. But through my chiropractor, who's also a nutritionist, she had given her certain supplements to take and whatnot. And she recovered.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Most people do recover, just like from regular flu. And we don't lock down countries over the regular flu, which has at least as bad of an incidence. Or things like tuberculosis. I think it's the fourth leading cause of death, something like that. And it's very, you know, you definitely don't want to catch tuberculosis. And that's something you can get from somebody else breathing on you. Or you would expect that there would be an epidemic of TB among the homeless, but we don't shut down whole countries over that. Another thing I wonder about is that we were all scared in the beginning when we saw those videos in China where people were falling down dead in the streets. But you don't see anything like that here. I mean, nobody,
right.
We don't seem to, we just don't seem to have the kind of issue that they had there that got us all scared. I don't know.
Right.
There's certainly plenty of diseases around that we don't shut down for.
Absolutely. You know, I think it was because, listen, time is hard to keep track of doing what I do. But I remember it was probably a year ago where some school, I forget which state it was in, all the kids came down with whooping cough. And all the kids that came down with whooping cough were inoculated before they came down with it.
Right, and the flu shot itself is very unreliable, and we're anticipated to have to get this COVID-19 shot twice a year because the antibodies just don't stick around very long. So even if you've actually had the disease, you are not protected against it for very long.
Right. Well, you know, that's right. That same doctor told me, because, you know, that he says, you know, the flu shot doesn't work either. I mean, he was very blunt with me. He said the flu shot doesn't work either. Every year we have new strains of it.
Right. Yeah. So that's probably what's going to happen again. And when they talk about the second wave, you wonder if they don't have it already. You know, it may already be a...
All right. Well, what do you think about Trump saying he's going to roll out a vaccine before the election? I mean, a lot of people online, I follow social media, are saying, yeah, we're not taking anything. He's rushing out for a political reason. Even the people that would take the vaccine.
Yeah, well, and many people, including me, you know, say we want to see the safety studies first. You know, the AstraZeneca vaccine, which was one of the front runners along with Moderna, to stop their studies because apparently they had a serious adverse reaction. They're not saying what, but it must have been pretty serious. Usually they count those as like you have to go to the hospital for a while. I'm guessing maybe somebody died. Who knows? Heart attack or something. I don't know.
Right.
But there's no way that they could have proven that this vaccine was safe in the space of 6 months or 9 months or a year, whatever they've been working on it, because there are the, for example, with regular vaccines, there's certainly a lot of people who, a lot of mothers who believe that their children got autism from the vaccine. I mean, they were totally normal and then suddenly they weren't. And right after they got these vaccines. So you'll never know that. Or things like sterility, it's going to take decades. It's known to take years to prove the safety of a vaccine.
Right.
So do we really want to be guinea pigs?
No.
And unfortunately, it's not in the Constitution, the right of medical freedom. There was an effort to get it in the Constitution, but it didn't happen. But, you know, there are things like the Nuremberg Code or whatever that says that you can't be subjected to a medical experiment without giving approval. And, of course, we always think that when we go to the hospital, we have to sign something about that we're willing to for them to pull the plug or whatever, you know, if we're incapacitated. So we think we have control over that. But in England, the UK, I saw there was a protest recently where one of the speakers said that they're telling doctors to write "do not resuscitate" in all these seniors, you know, in nursing homes, that just write it into the chart, "do not resuscitate." So they're letting them die, in other words.
Right. Well, you know, Canada's healthcare system is similar. After the age of 70, you're pretty much on your own. But again, on the other flip side of a good thing for Canada, is Canada announced this week that they're not going to mandate the vaccine.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like half a dozen in one and half a dozen in the other.
Yeah, and even if they don't mandate it, I mean, I personally have a daughter in Switzerland and a son in Colombia, Bogota, Colombia. I like to fly. I fly a lot. And if you can certainly see private, I mean, if Facebook can ban you because they are a private company, certainly an airline could say, well, we're a private company and we're not going to let you on the plane unless you've gotten the vaccine.
Right. Well, that's what they're doing in China already with their social credit system. I had a story a couple of weeks ago of an old man in China because I guess his Black Mirror social credit is against him. He couldn't take public transportation to go to his family, and he had to walk I don't know how many miles to get there. So people have to pay attention. This might sound like something out of a science fiction movie, but it's happening. And you know, in your article, I want to go back to your article. You had mentioned, and you said what was reported, at least on social media, and you know, we can't really trust too much stuff on social media, but it sounds, you know, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it probably is a duck. You said were planes landing in the night in Australia from the Chinese province of Guangdong carrying equipment related to 5G and the Chinese biometric social credit system, which was reportedly being installed under a blanket of secrecy.
Yeah, and there were pictures in the Facebook postings. I saw that, but then I couldn't find a link to include the link. But there were pictures of the boxes that had the name of the company on it. And so I searched the name of the company, and that is what they made, that type of equipment. So what they were, so supposedly they were installing this equipment in the night. It would be those sensors, you know, those cameras that they put on every street corner so they can tell who's where and what, that, you know, recognize you by facial recognition or whatever.
All right. 1984 on hyperspeed.
But you
wrote it as something, you quoted a professor at Boston University. We're living through a coup d'etat based on the oldest of ploys, declaring emergencies, suspending law and rights, just like after 9/11, and issuing arbitrary rules of behavior to excuse taking full powers.
Right.
And this could, like you said, portend things to come globally. I try to tell people what goes on in one place affects us all sooner or later. This is their goal.
Yeah, and I think there were 180 countries that signed this World Health Organization document that said they would all have do many things, but including that they would have these... the word is escaping me, but, you know, that they would do test runs, whatever, what's the word for that? And so we had the one in November where they did a mock run of how you would react in the case of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
I've reported on that too. And it always seems to involve, somehow or another, Bill Gates.
Right, yeah. And there's certain companies that are always involved. And also on ID 2020, Microsoft, of course, was Bill Gates' company. And it would be Microsoft doing all the computerization for this massive system of contact or of tracing your identity and arguably turning off your money or, you know, controlling your money. If you can't use cash, then you are totally dependent on this digital system, which is all electrical. I mean, they could just have a blackout and we'd all be
right. We'd all be screwed. Ellen, we need to take a short break. When we get back, I want to talk more about what's going on. And I want to talk about how they're controlling everybody's unemployment money right now, right here in America. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Null Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Ellen Brown, attorney, chair of the Public Banking Institute. Check out her work at ellenbrown.com. There's a live link here. Make up your own mind on what we're discussing today. We just put the information out there. Ellen, what I wanted to tell you was, with this unemployment and the extended unemployment that was, okay, what I found interesting is, first of all, you had to file online because all the offices are closed. I don't know what it's like in California. Here in Arizona, you had to file online. Then they give you a waiting period. They tell you you don't have to say you looked for a job during the week because of COVID-19, so that's scratched. Once they approve you, all that money, your unemployment and the whatever it was, $600, $300, then they here in Arizona, they are paying an extra $300 a week now. All that money goes to and through Bank of America. After you get approved, you have to wait to get what looks like a credit card from Bank of America, and you have to spend that money off that credit card. I found it ludicrous that Bank of America, I mean, I forget what the figure was. I think so far the banks have made $28 billion in processing fees for the unemployment. So here you have a situation where, you know, back in the day, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I think once in my life I collected unemployment. You know, that didn't come from Bank of America.
Right. So you're in Arizona. So is it the state that's paying that $300 a month?
Yes, the state reversed. They had gotten rid of it after the $600 expired. And then we were the first, and as far as I know, we're the only state as of this month that said we'll give people an extra $300.
Wow. And then is that a card that comes in the mail?
Yeah, it comes in the mail, the same post office that has the slowdown now.
Right.
So if you're hungry and you're starving, you have to wait after you file online. You have to wait anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. And once you get that credit card, because that's what it looks like, it's just like any other credit card. You have to call, verify the card, and then you can use. In other words, it's your unemployment money, which, by the way, you have to pay taxes on, which is ridiculous. You pay taxes on that money the first time you put it in there. But you have to use the card.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Everything will be digital and they can turn you off for whatever reason.
Well, yeah. Well, here's an example. Over the weekend, my town, for whatever reason, we lose our Wi-Fi and our phone service almost on a regular basis. We have the crappiest company in the world handling our Wi-Fi and phone. But the people here that normally would see their unemployment money, they're waiting for their unemployment money to show up on that Bank of America card by Sunday night. There was nothing because no one could get online. So the money didn't show up till the next day. So it also shows how dependent we are on the internet for so many things. You know, even if you want to, you know, even if you want to do any business with the Department of Motor Vehicles, they're closed too. So it all has to be online. You want to renew your pot card, you got to do that online. So it would be so easy for them to turn us all off.
Right, and totally control us, which is fascism or some form of totalitarian government. We are at a cusp of, you know, I mean, clearly we need a reset of some sort. We've got massive debts that in ancient history, anyway, they would have periodic debt jubilees, which they could do because the loans were issued by the government itself, by the king and the temple, which was a government entity.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't do that now because our banks are private, and of course they will contend they have rights of private property. Although I would argue that it's like eminent domain taking everybody's job. To shut off people's jobs is depriving them of private property and the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, we really need to get back to our constitutional principles. But anyway, they can't do a debt jubilee in that way. But I'm also chairman of the Public Banking Institute, and we argue that states should have their own state-owned banks, and that we should have that banking itself should be a public utility owned by the people collectively through their representative governments. Of course, we don't have representative governments now, or it doesn't feel like we do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if we get the people we want elected, they don't seem to... They don't really seem to be, you know, collectively, they're not acting for the group.
Right.
Anyway, but assuming we had a decent electoral system that actually worked for the people, and then we could get people in there, or if we had even if it's computerized, if we had some form of algorithm that actually serve the people. You could see that a universal basic income may be coming because
right.
When they get robots running everything, they're not going to need that much labor. So either they have massive deaths which may also be a goal. There's lots of rumors about that, eugenics, but assuming people are going to live through all this, if they want to keep people going, they'll have to pay them a universal basic income, and that will obviously be digital. I mean, I've written in favor of universal basic income because we need that. We need right. to get money into people's pockets in order to, it's an alternative form of reset, of getting rid of the debt. Well, this is a difficult subject, but all of our money is created as debt to banks today. That's where dollars come from. When you go to the bank for a loan, they just write that money into your account. They don't actually have the money, and that's the money that circulates in the economy. So it's all actually digital now. But we do at least have the option of trading it in for cash, whereas when the country was founded, you had the option of trading it in for gold, and it was a gold-backed system. But we still have at least the possibility of trading it in for something physical that we can store in our safety deposit boxes at home and have that security. But you can see an all-digital system could be coming, and we need to set that up. I mean, assuming that happens, we need to set it up in a way that it actually serves the people, but it's fair to all the people. So you could, on the one hand, I'm not opposed to a digital system because I can see where we need that. And, you know, we should retain our ability to use cash. We also need that. We need something that is independent of government so that they can't turn us off at will.
Well, a perfect example. So go back to the other day here. And this isn't the first time. There was one weekend where we actually lost Wi-Fi and phone service for 24 hours. Well, in that 24 hours, no store could process. If you wanted to go grocery shopping, they couldn't do it because their credit card machines weren't working. You know, most people use credit cards. I always keep some cash at hand because when I was a kid, I was taught cash is king. And there were still very few stores open, even if they said, well, if you have cash, you can buy this, but we can't run our machines. So, you know, there's a plus and a downside to all of it. So I think what you're saying makes sense, that we should be able to do both. You know, but when Andrew Yang talked about a universal basic income, everybody thought he was crazy. But who's laughing now with the stimulus check and the extra money on unemployment when it lasted?
Right. And they pumped trillions of dollars out to support the stock market and the big corporations, which is really a separate economy. That money never trickles down. And it's not true that wealth trickles down. It trickles up. Right. It never comes back into the real economy. It just circulates round and round in the stock market and in those big assets that wealthy people own. So, you know, we've all seen the numbers about how the billionaires got richer. So they've already poured money out there, but it is not creating inflation in the consumer economy because that money hasn't come into the consumer economy. So we need to and could pour another $2 trillion or whatever into the consumer economy for the consumers, for the people. So they definitely need some more UBI checks to go to the people.
Right, but I saw Mitch McConnell, I think, this morning saying that there won't be a second stimulus check. And he's still arguing over giving people $300 more a week. But, you know, not everybody qualifies for unemployment. There's a lot of people out there that maybe, I don't know, worked off the books most of their lives, didn't pay in much to unemployment. For whatever reason, they didn't qualify. What are they supposed to do?
Right. And the homeless who are all going to...
Exactly.
I mean, why are they homeless? Many of them are homeless because of the banking crisis of 2008, 2009, where they thought they had homes and they were foreclosed upon.
Right. There's a lot of people now that are for the first time in that position. You know, people that never had to worry about it, living in their cars, living on the street, going to food banks.
Right.
You know better than anybody that, you know, most Americans live one paycheck to the next.
Right. Here in LA, we have a huge homeless population because the weather's warm. So.
Right. Well, you know, I want to get back to something you said, because I think we talked about it on our show before, when you were talking about state-owned banks and federal credit unions. And I pretty much remember you saying that we should bring banking back to the post office. You know, here we're supposed to believe the post office is suffering only because they changed the law making them prepay retirement for 75 years. But wouldn't it be great if people could do their banking at the post office like they used to? I mean, I actually had to tell a young person, you can get a money order at the post office.
Right. Every other countries, most countries have postal banking. We had postal banking from 1911 to 1967. It was very successful, particularly during the Great Depression, because it was government-backed. You know, it was quite secure. And the post office paid 2% interest on deposits. So people put their cash in the post office, and you could have basic check cashing and, you know, basic banking services through the post office. And that's what 20 to 25% of the population currently does not have, the unbanked and underbanked. For example, in 1911, there were a lot of immigrants, and they were used to postal banking in their countries. Mm-hmm. And so when they came here, they kept their cash at home somewhere. So when they opened the postal banks, the cash came into the postal banks. But then in the 1930s, the banks all shut, the private banks were all bankrupt. And so nobody trusted the private banks. And so they rushed to the postal banks. But what Roosevelt's government did, instead of strengthening the postal banking system, mm-hmm. was to underwrite to the private banks with deposit insurance. And so after people knew that they, at that time it was $100,000 that was insured by the federal government in the banks, mm-hmm. so then they put their money in the banks, and that in 1967, the postal banking system was shut down on the argument that it was an emergency sort of thing, and the emergency was over, and the banks were back on their feet, and everything was okay. But we could have just strengthened this public postal banking system. That's what we should have, I think, is a national public banking system. Mm-hmm. In the CARES Act, the states only got $150 billion divided by 50 states, so that's an average of only $3 billion each. And Mitch McConnell said he would rather see the states go bankrupt. States are not allowed to file for bankruptcy, but he and his contingent have long been pushing for privatizing everything, including the public pension funds. That's what he thinks the public pension funds are, mm-hmm. why the states are bankrupt. But obviously, the states have been, like the small businesses, the states have been seriously handicapped by this, by the pandemic, or by it's the governors that shut down the states, but they did it based on CDC numbers, which, you know, so the numbers came from the federal government originally, and the numbers are now known to have been very wildly wrong. They actually came from Imperial College London, and based on, I mean, that was highly, that modeling was something wrong by, I think, 10 times higher than what actually materialized. So anyway, it was, you could argue that it was the federal government that has shut down the system, and the states don't have the taxes that are, is their income base, and they have a lot of extra costs that they didn't have before. So all the states are suffering. Not only did they only get an average of $3 billion each out of the CARES Act, but there was a limit put on what they could use this money for. It had to be directly related to the virus. In other words, it had to be like for hospital supplies or something.
All right. But yet you see a lot of the, rich that got that money, and the fake religionists out there that, you know, bought themselves a yacht or a mansion or whatever, and nobody seems to care about that.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get screwed. That's what my mother used to say all the time. So,
yeah, well, it's the poor pay. They're the ones that make the rich richer. Yeah.
Well, you know, at one point, you know, I remember, God, it must have been 10, maybe more years ago, during the horror that was the George Bush administration. He referred to us as consumers. They never refer to us as citizens. They call us consumers, and you know he was complaining that consumer spending was down during his crash and recession. And I was like, you got to have money in order to consume. You can't consume with nothing.
Right. Well, that's why they've got to do a UBI. If you want to have an economy at all, you've got to have demand, which is consumption, and supply, which is the money. So you've got to put the money out there, and you've got to have people spending it. So it's got to get in the pockets of the people who will spend it in your local markets. And that's what we don't have right now.
Well, looking at, you know, let's cut the payroll tax, which I'm like, how is that going to benefit anybody? Because he already made it clear that employers have to still pay it come next year. It's kind of like, you know, extending an eviction notice, but your rent is still accruing. What do they expect people to do? And now they, you know, the big talk is again going after Social Security. It's like they want all seniors dead.
Yeah, I get Social Security.
So do
I. It's definitely a nice thing to have a check that comes every month from the government.
Right, and it's not like we're getting $1 million a month either. You know, people don't, you know, people, young people especially don't understand. Even our Medicare, they take that out of your Social Security check before you get it. So you're paying for it. It's not like it's free. Everybody thinks it's free. It's not.
Yeah, well, and we paid taxes over a lifetime. But they could. I mean, one thing that we've seen from this whole pandemic is that the central bank can generate trillions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't cost the taxpayers a penny, and so far it hasn't created any great inflation. I mean, it inflated the stock market, but the stock market just took a dive the last 3 days. I think it's back up today, but
yeah, but most Americans are not involved in the stock market, so to say that our economy's doing good because the market is up means nothing to at least 80% of us.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's big money that actually runs the government, and so whoever is in power has to please big money. And
right.
I agree with you. It's,
I know we live
it's
in
not a true barometer of the economy.
We live
it's
in
the barometer of who's going to elect the next round of politicians.
Right. Well, you know, Confucius was it that said, "May you live in interesting times."
Oh, we're definitely in interesting times.
That's
for
sure.
Reset times, and that's what we, the people, have to. We've got the power if we could get organized, but we really can't. I mean, what group, what even political party actually represents the people these days?
They don't. That's why, you know, to me, I get excited when these young progressives get in. But, you know, I've been alive a long time like you, and I've seen a lot of people either sell out or buy in, or they get threatened to go along with the system. But let's hope that will change.
Yeah, in the public banking movement, the young people have taken over here in California, and it's just great how well they mobilize. And, they're amazing workers and amazing speakers. It's super.
That is great. Well, let's hope this generation can get done what our generation tried. Now everything seems to be reversed and we got to fight for the same things all over again. Ellen, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's great talking to you.
Same here. We'll do it more often.
Okay.
All right. You take good care.
You too.
Okay.
Thanks for
you. You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Ellen Brown. Check her out at ellenbrown.com. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Again, thanks for supporting the show. And let your normal friends know that there is a place for them to feel safe and get the news, real news, life-changing news, information, education, than the garbage that they see on MSM every day. Okay, well, thanks again for listening. I'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.